It's To the Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Ann Strainchamps. Today, political engagement. Voters will head to the polls for congressional midterm elections in just a few weeks. But according to some estimates, voter turnout is likely to be lower than in previous years. So is that because we're sick and tired of politics? Apathetic about the issues and candidates? Or are we just too busy to care? In this hour, what would it take to make politics more fun and engaging for everyone? Here's one example. You know those notices you get for local public hearings? Water quality, street maintenance, school board? Well, if you're like me, you're not exactly rearranging your life to attend them. I mean, yes, they matter, but they're just kind of boring. Josh Lerner thinks local governments could boost the fun factor in the political process by borrowing ideas from game design. He's watched this happen in places like Venezuela, Canada, and Argentina, and he writes about it in a book called Making Democracy Fun. Charles Monroe Kane asked where he went and what he saw.
In Argentina, I did research on several local government programs. One of them was a program called Rosario Habitat, which was designed to redevelop the shanty towns. So in Argentina, like a lot of Latin American countries, there are extremely poor shanty towns scattered across the city. So shacks built of scavenged material, of cardboard, of metal planks, no streets, no safe access to running water, electricity, sewage. And the city wanted to change this and turn these neighborhoods into actual communities where people might want to live and which could be more functional and healthy. So they did this through a program where they asked residents in those shantytowns to decide on new plans for their neighborhoods. And it was really challenging at first, and they actually failed miserably. And the first few meetings, they ended up getting chased out of the shantytown by residents, and actually staff got stabbed by some of the residents. So they decided that they had to try something different, and that's when they brought in games.
They brought in games. I hear you say that. What does that mean?
So first, they integrated games directly into the meetings. So for example, they invited people in the shantytown in this one block into a community center, into a big room, and passed out a bag to each table, and it was full of puzzle pieces. And they asked people first to put the pieces together in their teams in each table. And folks were trying to put the pieces together but couldn't quite figure it out. So then the facilitator, this woman, Luciana, said, okay, now you can talk with people at other tables, which hadn't actually been against the rules, just no one had thought of it because they were sitting at their own tables. And so quickly they got up, went to their tables, and realized that each table had a missing piece from their tables. And it quickly transformed what had been a very individualistic setting of people wanting better houses for their own family into more of a collaborative environment where people recognize they needed to work together to tackle these big challenges.
So everyone's got the puzzle pieces they've gotten. They got the idea they can work together, a little bit empowered. Now what happens?
Yeah, so this is where it gets trickier, where you have to actually make decisions. And that's what I think there's the biggest potential for growth and for learning from games. So the next step was they had to decide on rules for how they were going to proceed with the process. So there were some fixed rules by the program, things like if you want to install a new street so that you can have access to water and electricity and sewage, then the people who would be displaced by that street would have to move, but they'd also get new houses that the city would provide for free. Any houses that would be built, any new houses, would have to be at least 90 meters squared. So there are these technical constraints, other ones like that. But then there's the question of, let's say that there's only space for two families and there's three families that want to live in a certain area. How do you decide which families stay and which families go? And so first they started by deciding on rules for this. So how would you prioritize who would stay and who would go? And they asked folks to identify criteria they would use to decide on that. So for example, if someone had a job nearby, if they had a physical disability, if they were a single parent. And so they asked for those ideas, and then people actually, they brainstormed them, and then the residents themselves voted on which of those were most important. So they ended up with a list of ranked priorities for deciding who would stay and who would go in cases where there was conflict. Following that, then came the really tricky part of deciding where people's houses would go, where people would move to. And for that, what they did is fascinating. They basically adapted the game Tetris. So they had these maps of the blocks and cut out different shapes from kind of colored transparency paper. So there were, you know, purple rectangles and green squares and L's, each of them representing 90 meters squared, which is that basic minimum lot size. And they asked the residents themselves to rearrange the pieces on a map to decide basically on a new land use plan.
That's so interesting. So how did it work out in the end? Was there conflict?
Yeah, so there was conflict during that, and I don't want to say it's a conflict-free process. No. What the game did is it made that conflict more manageable, and it allowed people to overcome it. So there were people who didn't want to move, and they started out the process not wanting to move, and it was through this game where some of that conflict was displaced onto the map. So it wasn't me versus you, it wasn't neighbor versus neighbor, it was how are we going to rearrange these pieces on a map? And so that refocused people's attention so that they were able to step back a bit from their personal conflicts and reach agreements. For example, there was this one guy, Mario, at one of the workshops, and this was probably the second or third workshop. So they already started developing the plan, they had some basic contours for it, and this guy Mario, this big beefy guy, had a, you know, pulled back hair, the little cap on, and he's just staring at the map as people are going through this exercise, and suddenly he points to this one spot in the map where there's a road, and he's very furious and just yells out, you know, that's my house. And you can see there's even a skull tattoo on his hands, and he's saying, you know, my dad built that house with his bare hands. I've lived there my entire life, and now you're saying that I have to move because the city wants to put a road there. And he was furious, and I should mention, too, that this is in a situation of a lot of violence. So there had actually been, in addition to the stabbing I mentioned before, there had been a few gunpoint robberies of staff in the weeks beforehand where residents of this same shantytown had come into the office and pointed a gun at staff's head and robbed them right there in the office in broad daylight and walked back out. So I didn't know what was going to happen, to be honest. I started inching towards the door. The facilitators looked at each other nervously. And that's when the most amazing thing happened, where the facilitators didn't say anything. I didn't say anything. Actually, this guy's neighbors spoke up, and they're like, whoa. The reason the road is going here is because of the rules that we agreed on, because this is the only way that we're going to get running water, that we're going to get electricity, that we're going to get our own land. And you will get a new house. You will get a new house that's actually better than your current one on a new plot of land, and you'll get to decide where that is. And gradually started explaining to this guy how it was part of this whole system they had agreed on that was resulting in him moving. And he still wasn't happy by any means, and he asked staff to go check with the planning department and see if they could redesign the street. But he said, you know, if they can't, I'll move. It's okay.
You know, I hear what you're saying, but it's still very local. It's very, very locally participatory, right? Like, this is my house, the road that affects my life. If you extrapolate this out to a bigger area, to a state, to a nation, how does this work on a much bigger scale, like a national scale? Can it?
They certainly can. I mean, maybe just to get there, we'll take it up one level higher, so the city level. So in a large city. And so one of the other programs I looked at was in Toronto Community Housing. And second largest housing authority in North America, 164,000 tenants, people living across the city in a wide range of buildings. And the city there launched a program called participatory budgeting, which I also do a lot of work on outside of the book. And basically it let residents of these buildings decide how to spend a part of the housing authority's budget through a format that used a lot of games and game design like I described in Rosario, where people themselves were putting together proposals, voting on them, working in teams, and through that deciding how to spend real money across the entire city.
But as we know, I mean, I'm in America, right? I mean, I think you had in your book, but there's a recent poll that said only 22% of Americans trust their government at all. Do you think games could restore faith that's gone that far away from what we believe in?
I do. I think games and really game design, that's what I emphasize most in the book. It's not just about sprinkling in a game here and there. It's about rethinking the system of democracy and redesigning it so that it's more engaging for folks who are currently excluded from or marginalized by that system. And I think it's actually essential to the health of our democracy. So I don't see games as something that's frivolous, but rather that's critical for having a representative, healthy democracy.
I can see someone out there who's like, games, the word game, it's trivial. The word fun is trivial. And by framing it that way, you're not taking democracy seriously. What do you do with the critics on the words like fun and game? How do you handle that when people are like, man, these are games. Where, you know, that's cute, but we need to do something serious.
Part of it comes down to understanding of the word fun. And I think there's a common misconception about fun that we think of fun as we're sitting back laughing, this wild smile on our face, and maybe laying on the beach doing something that's utterly pointless. And that's actually not when we're enjoying ourselves the most. So if you think about the things that are most fun to you, often you have a really serious look on your face. So if you're playing a video game or a sport or even if you're through work, I mean, I imagine that for a surgeon, doing a surgery can be fun. It's testing their abilities, that they're in this flow state where they're using maximal use of their abilities to try something that's hard and feeling a real sense of achievement from that. So that's actually when we have the most fun, is when we're applying ourselves in a meaningful and fulfilling way. And I think that's what democracy should be. The other thing is, I think people want to have a say over the decisions that affect their lives. And if government can offer that to them, then people will want to participate more. So it's, in a sense, asking them to participate more, but I would reframe it a bit as inviting them to participate. Mm-hmm. So rather than having participation be this kind of civic chore that you should participate in because it's good for the country, if we can reframe that as democracy being something that actually you want to participate in, that in your free time you see that as valuable, enjoyable, and as worthwhile as, you know, say, sitting in front of the TV doing nothing. And I think that's certainly feasible. And we're seeing all across the world that people are engaging in meaningful ways in all kinds of things besides government and things that don't really have much impact in their lives. So for me, it's more of a paradox that making decisions that affect people's lives, you know, that should be interesting. That should be meaningful for people. And it's impressive how we've made that so unappealing.
Josh Lerner is the executive director of the Participatory Budgeting Project and the author of Making Democracy Fun: How Game Design Can Empower Citizens and Transform Politics.